Another. Helena.
Troy staggered away from the gurney and Hal's naked body. The echo of the old man's feeble screams came back to him, insisting he was someone named Carlton. Troy ran his hands along the curved top of the cryopod.
She was here.
Sir, we really need to keep moving.
Troy ignored the doctor.
He rubbed the glass shield, the cold inside leaching into his hand. Sir.
A spiderweb of frost covered the glass. He wiped the frozen film of condensation away so he could see inside.
We need to get this man installed.
Closed eyes lay inside that cold and dark place. Blades of ice clung to her lashes. It was a familiar face, but this was not his wife.
Sir!
Troy stumbled, hands slapping at the cold coffin for balance, bile rising in his throat with remembrance. He heard himself gag, felt his limbs twitch, his knees buckle. He hit the ground between two of the pods and shook violently, spit on his lips, strong memories wrestling with the last residue of the drug still in his veins. The two men in white shouted at each other. Footsteps slapped frosted steel and faded toward the distant and heavy door. Inhuman gurgles hit Troy's ears and sounded faintly as though they came from him.
Who was he?
What was he doing here? What were any of them doing?
This was not Helen. His name was not Troy.
Footsteps stomped toward him in a hurry. The name was on his tongue as the needle bit his flesh.
Donnie.
But that wasn't right either.
And then the darkness took him, tightening down around anything from his past that his mind deemed too awful to bear.
Chapter 19. The year 2052, Fulton County, Georgia. Some mashup of music festival, family reunion, and state fair had descended on the southernmost corner of Fulton County. For the past 2 weeks, Donald had watched while colorful tents sprang up over a brand new nuclear containment facility. 50 state flags flew over 50 depressions in the earth. Stages had been erected, an endless parade of supplies flowed over the rolling hills, golf carts and four-wheelers forming convoys of food, Tupperware containers, baskets of vegetables. Some even pulled small enclosed trailers loaded with livestock. Farmers' markets had been staked out in winding corridors of tents and booths, chickens clucking and pigs snorting, children petting rabbits, dogs on leashes. Owners of the latter guided dozens of breeds through the crowds. Tails wagged happily, and wet noses sniffed the air. On Georgia's main stage, a local rock band performed a sound check. When they fell quiet to just levels, Donald could hear the twangs of bluegrass spilling over from the general direction of North Carolina's delegation. In the opposite direction, someone was giving a speech on Florida's stage, while the convoys moved supplies over the rise, and families spread blankets and picnicked on the banks of sweeping bowls. The hills, Donald saw, formed stadium seating, as if they'd been designed for the task. What he couldn't figure out was where they were putting all those supplies. The tents seemed to be gobbling them up with no end in sight. The four-wheelers with their little boxed trailers had been rumbling up and down the slopes the entire 2 weeks he'd been there, helping prep for the national convention. Mick rumbled to a stop beside him, sitting atop one of the ubiquitous all-terrain vehicles. He grinned at Donald and goosed the throttle while still holding the brakes. The Honda lurched, tires growling against the dirt.
"Want to go for a ride to South Carolina?"
he yelled over the engine. He shifted forward on the seat to make room.
"You got enough gas to make it there?"
Donald held his friend's shoulder and stepped on the second set of pegs. He threw his leg over the seat.
"It's just over that hill, you idiot."
Donald resisted the urge to assure Mick he'd been joking. He held onto the metal rack behind him as Mick shifted through the gears. His friend stuck to the dusty highway between the tents until they reached the grass, then angled toward the South Carolina delegation, the tops of the buildings of downtown Atlanta visible off to one side. Mick turned his head as the Honda climbed the hill.
"When is Helen getting here?" he yelled.
Donald leaned forward. He loved the feel of the crisp October morning air. It reminded him of Savannah that time of year, the chill of a sunrise on the beach. He had just been thinking of Helen when Mick asked about her.
"Tomorrow," he shouted. "She's coming on a bus with the delegates from Savannah."
They crested the hill, and Mick throttled back and steered along the ridgeline. They passed a loaded down ATV heading in the opposite direction. The network of ridges formed an interlocking maze of highways high above each containment facility's sunken bowl. Peering into the distance, Donald watched the ballet of scooting ATVs weave across the landscape. One day, he imagined, the flat roads on top of the hills would rumble with much larger trucks bearing hazardous waste and radiation warnings. And yet, seeing the flags waving over the Florida delegation to one side and the Georgia stage to the other, and noting the way the slopes would carry record crowds and afford everyone a perfect view of each stage, Donald couldn't help but think that all the happy accidents had some larger purpose. It was as if the facility had been planned from the beginning to serve the 2052 National Convention, as if it had been built with more than its original goal in mind. A large blue flag with a white tree and crescent moon swayed lazily over the South Carolina stage. Mick parked the four-wheeler in a sea of other ATVs, ringing the large hospitality tent. Following Mick through the parked vehicles, Donald saw that they were heading toward a smaller tent, which was swallowing a ton of traffic.
"What kind of errand are we on?" he asked.
Not that it mattered. In recent days, they'd done a little of everything around the facility, running bags of ice to various state headquarters, meeting with congressmen and senators to see if they needed anything, making sure all the volunteers and delegates were settling into their trailers okay, whatever the senator needed.
"Oh, we're just taking a little tour," Mick said cryptically.
He waved Donald into the small tent, where workers were filing through in one direction with their arms loaded, and coming out the other side, empty-handed. The inside of the small tent was lit up with floodlights, the ground packed hard from traffic, the grass matted flat. A concrete ramp led deep into the earth, workers with volunteer badges trudging up one side. Mick jumped into the line heading down. Donald knew where they were going. He recognized the ramp. He hurried up beside Mick.
"This is one of the Rod storage facilities."
He couldn't hide the excitement in his voice, didn't even try. He'd been dying to see the other design, either on paper or in person. All he was privy to was his bunker project. The rest of the facility remained shrouded in mystery.
"Can we just go in?"
As if to answer, Mick started down the ramp, blending with the others.
"I begged for a tour the other day," Donald hissed, "but Thurman spattered all this national security crap."
Mick laughed. Halfway down the slope, the roof of the tent seemed to recede into the darkness above, and the concrete walls on either side funneled the workers toward gaping steel doors.
"You're not going to see inside one of those other facilities," Mick told him.
He put his hand on Donald's back and ushered him through the industrial-looking and familiar entrance chamber. The foot traffic ground to a halt as people took turns entering or leaving through the small hatch ahead. Donald felt turned around.
"Wade."
Donald caught glimpses through the hatch.
"What the hell? This is my design."
They shuffled forward. Mick made room for the people coming out. He had a hand on Donald's shoulder, guiding him along. "What are we doing here?" Donald asked. He could have sworn his own bunker design was in the bowl set aside for Tennessee. Then again, they'd been making so many last-minute changes the past weeks, maybe he'd been mixed up.
"Anna told me you wimped out and skipped the tour of this place."
"That's bullshit."
Donald stopped at the oval hatch. He recognized every rivet.
"Why would she say that?"
"I was right here. I cut the damn ribbon."
Mick pushed at his back.
"Go. You're holding up the line."
"I don't want to go."
He waved the people out. The workers behind Mick shifted in place, heavy Tupperware containers in their hands.
"I saw the top floor last time," he said. "That was enough."
His friend clasped his neck with one hand and gripped his wrist with the other. As his head was bent forward, Donald had to move along to avoid falling on his face. He tried to reach for the jamb of the interior door, but Mick had his wrist.
"I want you to see what you built," his friend said.
Donald stumbled through to the security office. He and Mick stepped aside to let the congestion they'd caused ease past.
"I've been looking at this damn thing every day for 3 years, Donald said.
He patted his pocket for his pills, wondered if it was too soon to take another. What he didn't tell Mick was that he'd forced himself to envision his design being above ground the entire time he'd worked on it, more a skyscraper than a buried straw. No way could he share that with his best friend, tell him how terrified he felt right then, with no more than 10 meters of dirt and concrete over his head. He seriously doubted Anna had used the phrase, "wimped out," but that's exactly what he had done after cutting the ribbon. While the senator led dignitaries through the complex, Donald had hurried up to find a patch of grass with nothing but bright blue sky above.
"This is really fucking important," Mick said.
He snapped his fingers in front of Donald. Two lines of workers filed past. Beyond them, a man sat in a small cubicle, a brush in one hand and a can of paint in the other. He was applying a coat of flat grey to a set of steel bars. A technician behind him worked to wire some kind of massive screen into the wall. Not everything looked as if it was being finished precisely the way Donald had drawn it.
"Donnie, listen to me. I'm serious. Today is the last day we can have this talk, okay? I need you to see what you built."
Mick's permanent and mischievous grin was gone. His eyebrows tilted. He looked, if anything, sad.
"Will you please come inside?"
Taking a full breath and fighting the urge to rush out to the hills and fresh air, away from the stifling crowds, Donald found himself agreeing. It was the look on Mick's face, the feeling that he needed to tell Donald about a loved one who had just passed away, something deathly serious. Mick patted his shoulder in gratitude as Donald nodded.
"This way."
Mick led him toward the central shaft. They passed through the cafeteria, which was being used. It made sense. Workers sat at tables and ate off plastic trays, taking a break. The smell of food drifted from the kitchens beyond. Donald laughed. He never thought they'd be used at all. Again, it felt as though the convention had given this place a purpose. It made him happy. He thought of the entire complex devoid of life one day, all the workers milling about outside, storing away nuclear rods, while this massive building that would have touched the clouds had it been above ground, would sit perfectly empty. Down a short hallway, the tile gave way to metal grating, and a broad cylinder dived straight through the heart of the facility. Anna had been right. It really was worth seeing. They reached the railing of the central shaft, and Donald paused to peer over. The vast height made him forget for a moment that he was underground. On the other side of the landing, A conveyor lift rattled on its gears while a never-ending series of flat loading trays spun empty over the top. It reminded Donald of the buckets on a water wheel. The trays flopped over before descending back down through the building. The men and women from outside deposited each of their containers onto one of the empty trays before turning and heading back out. Donald looked for Mick and saw him disappearing down the staircase. He hurried after, his fear of being buried alive chasing him. "Hey!" His shoes slapped the freshly painted stairs, the diamond plating keeping him from skidding off in his haste. He caught up with Mick as they made a full circuit of the thick inner post. Tupperware containers full of emergency supplies. Supplies Donald figured would rot, unused, drifted eerily downward beyond the rail.
"I don't want to go any deeper than this," he insisted. "Two levels down," Mick called back up. "Come on, man, I want you to see."